Well, last week, as the country awaited the Supreme Court's landmark ruling on health care, this is what people were talking about here in Boston.
If you're a bear, you're on the run, you're in Brookline, what better place than Pine Road and one of those giant white pines, tallest one around. Only trouble is, once again, people spotted him.
Him was the 5-foot-tall, 180-pound American black bear that climbed a tree in the backyard of a multi-million-dollar home in the Boston suburb of Brookline, home to the fancy Chestnut Hill Mall, and just a few miles from our studios.
They said there's a bear in your yard, and I didn't believe them at first. It's Brookline.
But bears are showing up beyond Brookline.
That bear was spotted early this morning on the campus of USF, then headed for Busch Gardens in Tampa.
That was a bear going to college. Now, regular listeners know we've been working our way through bears. A few weeks ago, grizzlies in the West. Today, bears, black bears, increasingly in the East. Now, we know there's more wildlife in developed areas. One misty morning, I saw a huge deer in Harvard Square. A possum followed the dogs in one night. Wild turkeys, coyotes. Gary Ault is a biologist and principal scientist for the environmental consulting firm Norman Doe Associates. He's there in Lagunitas, California. But for years, he ran Pennsylvania's bear management program, and we want to spend a few minutes with him on these recent black bear sightings, especially the one bear here in Boston in a Tony neighborhood. Gary, welcome.
Hello.
Are you at all surprised?
No, not really. It sounds like a bear with good taste.
Yes, that's right.
We all see this happening all over the country, actually, this kind of thing.
Well, we thought, as long as you're there, go to the mall. But this
right.
This particular bear had, a couple weeks prior, been seen the length of Cape Cod. I mean, he walked the length of Cape Cod until he got to the end. He's at the ocean. And that's when animal rescuers sedated him and brought him all the way out to western Massachusetts. But he made his way back to Brookline. Why? What's compelling him?
Well, often young males especially disperse. Their mothers kick them out of their natal home range between the age of 18 months and 30 months, and they strike out on their own. And they often will disperse 10, 20, 40, 50, sometimes up to 100 miles away. When they're doing that, those are the ones who most often wind up in urban areas like you're describing here, and they try desperately to find new areas to live.
Tell us more about this, because we recently did a story on grizzly bears. Mm-hmm. And we know there's a big difference between the grizzly, the brown bear, and these black bears that we're talking about. These are crowded urban areas. This fellow made his way through Cape Cod. Why aren't they afraid?
Well, the bears are incredibly good at adapting to human encroachment. In fact, some of the highest densities of black bears anywhere on this continent is in northern New Jersey, right? And living under people's houses in the final years that I was working on bears in Pennsylvania, I was removing about six mothers with cubs from six different homes every year that actually denned, you know, under the house. And you know what? I'd say three-quarters of the time, the people didn't even know the bear were there. So this is just the tip of the iceberg. They're very good at adapting.
And tell us more about the difference between the black bear and the grizzly. If you see, for instance, a grizzly, you should play dead because, you know, they might attack you if they think you're attacking. Whereas with black bears, you can make a lot of noise and scare them away. Is that myth or is that true?
Brown bears evolved in a more open environment, and therefore they also evolved a more aggressive demeanor. So that's what makes them more aggressive. If you're going to live in the valley, you need to be the meanest, baddest thing there to survive. That's the way they operate. Black bears evolved in a forested ecosystem, and they've evolved more of a strategy of defense than offense. And so when they have danger, you'll hear them woof, and the cubs, if they have cubs with them, the cubs will go up a tree, and often they'll retreat up just behind the cubs.
Is that also true that black bears can climb trees, whereas grizzlies can't?
Black bears evolved in a forested environment. They are phenomenal tree climbers. Forget it. If you think you're going to out-climb a tree, good luck, because by the time you get 6 feet off the ground, the bear could be in the top of the tree waiting for you to get up there. Grizzlies are not nearly so good at climbing trees, but people have been pulled out of trees as high as 36 feet by grizzly bears. He didn't read the book that he wasn't supposed to be able to climb. The easiest way to tell them apart is that grizzly bears have a shoulder hump. A hump of muscles on their shoulder, which they use for digging, so they can see that. They're usually brown in color, although black bears can be brown as well. But just to put things in perspective in terms of risk management, throughout the entire continent of North America each year, about 3 people are killed by bears on the average, 2 by grizzlies, 1 by black bears in general. And put that in perspective.
We understand you're 180 times more likely to be killed by a bee, 160,000 times more likely to die in a car accident. So,
right.
But that
right.
said, what to do if the bear is in the white pine tree in your backyard or in the suburbs?
And call the biologist.
I guess you call the police or something.
They'll eventually direct the call to a biologist who will come in and anesthetize the bear and lower them down. I've gone into many, many cities and removed bears from trees. It's usually in the middle of the night, and you've got somewhere between 100 and 400 people watching.
It caused an uproar here in Boston. A local columnist, Brian Rigori, who's very fond of animals, very upset that they didn't have any cushioning prepared to put under the bear that was anesthetized and then fell quite a few feet. He's okay.
Yeah.
Just briefly, do we understand, too, that black bears have a different face profile than grizzlies?
Yeah. Black bear has more of a straight profile, and the grizzly has more of a what's called a dished-out facial profile. That's not the easiest thing to tell. That shoulder hump can be seen from quite a ways away, and the long claws are pretty obvious.
Well,
you know, another thing that was very, very interesting, I thought, I had always heard about Native Americans walking down and killing bears, and when I was young, in my 20s, and started studying bears, I thought, I wonder if I could do that. And so I had a radio collared bear, this 560-pound male that was living out into a swamp, and I went out and actually went after it, and I followed that bear for 2 days, for 14 and a half miles, and I learned a lot and developed enormous respect for how they live. First of all, I never could have killed it. Second of all, once it realized I was following its tracks, it would lead me into these really dense areas, and then it would swing a loop around. It would bed downwind of where, if I was following the tracks, it could tell when I was coming. And in case of grizzly bears, of course, they often kill people in that scenario, but in black bears, they simply run away. But what I found unnerving was when I was following the tracks, then it came around and got on my tracks. And so now I'm walking, I see their original tracks, my tracks, its tracks, my tracks. And they start looking over your shoulder, who's following who? And once he realized I was really after him, then he would play these games like it's called backtracking. He would go walk normal, and then he would turn around without ever leaving a sign in the snow, perfect tracking snow, step exactly in the same footprints coming back. The first time I came to that, I thought it was like Star Trek had beamed him aboard the Starship Enterprise.
He just disappeared.
Like these tracks just, you know, the tracks are going out in the middle of the woods, and they just stop. It's like, where did he go? And I'm looking up the tops of trees that are 30 feet away. It's like, there's no way he could have leaped that far. When I got down on my hands and knees, I actually looked at the track and said, my God, he turned around without ever making a mark. And he goes back 100 yards and in dense cover and leaps out of his tracks and starts going in a different direction. And he did that 26 times in 2 days, and he messed me up every time. I had a radio around my waist. The bear had one around its neck, and my dad was in an airplane keeping track of us the whole time to see how far apart we were. He averaged a good mile ahead of me almost the whole time. And after doing that for 2 days, I just realized they have so many tricks up their sleeve about how not to get caught that I was fascinated by them.
And again, you didn't want to catch or kill him emotionally, and legally you couldn't. That's wildlife biologist Gary Ault. We'll have his pictures at hereandnow.org. On Facebook, Laura Pritchett, author of Great Colorado Bear Stories, writes, "We're having bears come down because of the wildfires. Interesting times ahead." Indeed. Back in a minute.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to our conversation with wildlife biologist Gary Ault about the recent uptick in black bear sightings in places like the middle of Vineland, New Jersey, or up a tree in the backyard of an upscale home in Brookline, Massachusetts, or across from a McDonald's in Tampa, Florida. Gary, these bears that have been showing up, Boston, New Jersey, but in Florida, wildlife officials say they're going to remove black bears from that state's list of threatened species. Now, the bear population has risen from 300 in 1974 to 3,000 today in Florida. Do you think, though, that removing them from that list is the right thing to do?
Each state will decide what they want to do, but basically, when it comes to black bears, they have been increasing dramatically across much of the United States, a tenfold increase in Florida, which caused them to be delisted. In terms of Massachusetts, similar trend from about 100 in the early 70s to now over 3,000. In Pennsylvania, where I studied bears for almost 30 years, when I started in the mid-70s, there were about 2,500 bears. When I left, there were almost 20,000. There's a 3 to 4-fold increase in Wisconsin. They've more than doubled in California. Basically, much of our land was converted to agriculture, and agriculture was kind of in its heyday in the late 1890s and thereabouts. And for the last 12 decades or so, the trend has gone the other way, and much of our land has been reverting back to forest. And as that has happened, we've seen dramatic increases in white-tailed deer, black bears, and species, you know, that live in forests.
But what do you think should happen, and what do you think might happen? I mean, black bears show up at bird feeders and in
yep.
people's cars. You know, there's that great
yep.
YouTube video of the black bear sitting playing with a wheel.
Yep.
Do you think that there's going to be a crackdown on black bears, and do you worry about that?
Well, I would say the black bears are probably in better shape than they've ever been in our lifetime by far. And so what we refer to as social caring capacity, you know, how many, it's not how many bears can live anymore on our area, it's how many bears people will allow to live on our area. When we think of the frontier, we think of Alaska or the remote areas of Canada, but in one way, one of the frontiers is in northern New Jersey. I mean, that has shown us how incredibly dense bear populations can become in very, very high human densities as well. I don't know of anywhere that's kind of that far out. But there are conflicts. In states like Pennsylvania, they continue to hunt them. In most states, they're hunting bears. When numbers get so abundant that the conflicts between agriculture and bears, or just confrontations and conflicts between bears and humans, it's a social decision that each state typically makes about what to do. I'm not worried about bears being decimated or overhunted in the 21st century. This is not going to be allowed by our society. So typically when they go down that route and start to hunt, they do a lot of studies to try and figure out what are the number of bears that are living out there, how many do we want to have, and they can pretty nicely regulate that population.
And what do you think here in Massachusetts can be done to keep this, our new best friend, this black bear, from coming back? I mean, now we're sort of attached to him. We don't want him to get hit by a car or become the kind of threat where he has to be shot. How do you keep him from coming back?
Well, it's difficult because if he's got a desire to disperse in that one area and keeps going back to it, it's kind of hard to stop them. These guys can navigate out to 100 miles pretty well. In terms of a management standpoint, I mean, we try to give the most protection that we can, but when you're managing populations of bears instead of individual bears, which states typically do, there are times when you lose some. They just want to go in those areas. And you also have to be careful about the safety of the people in those areas.
Right.
You don't want bears going places where they really don't belong for their safety as well as for people's safety. So I know in a lot of states when bears become intolerably aggressive, where they start charging people and getting really aggressive, they will usually euthanize the bears that are trying to exhibit, you know, strong aggression. It occasionally happens. It's kind of rare. But when bears start to exhibit that behavior, you want to stop it.
Yeah. That's Gary Ault, biologist and principal scientist for the environmental consulting group Normando Associates. And we also mentioned that for years, Gary, you ran Pennsylvania's bear management program. Give us your best black bear story.
Well, I could tell you 100 of them, but one night I had a woman screaming into the telephone just as loud as she could scream. He's trying to kill me. He's trying to kill me. And I thought it was supposed to be a 911 call that should have been directed to the police. But I said, who's trying to kill you? And she said, a bear. And I thought, well, she's got the right number anyway. So I went over to her house, and what I learned was this is an elderly woman, home alone. She cooked dinner, and her exhaust vent from her kitchen was right above the doorbell on the front porch. And so the bear smelled this, you know, wonderful-smelling smell coming out of the vent. That's what attracted it. And every time it would stand up and lean against the side of the house to smell the exhaust vent, it inadvertently would ring the doorbell. Well, this elderly woman, you know, opened the door, and she's, you know, how may I help you? She opens the door. It's like nose-to-nose with a standing bear. She slams the door shut, locks the door, runs to the back of the house. She's hysterical.
And he rings again.
And he's ringing the bell. And so even when I was talking to her on the phone, you could hear the doorbell ringing. And she's like, he's trying to kill me. You could not convince her that that bear was not ringing that doorbell to have her come out so it could kill her, kind of like a Saturday Night Live land shark version, you know.
But I'm laughing, but it just goes to show how these black bears are, a grizzly might have, but this black bear just wanted to smell the exhaust and wasn't scared.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, they learn that they can live in these developed areas without being injured, and it's a real challenge for wildlife agencies to try and deal with that because they can get into all kinds of problems. They start killing pets. Of course, they're always getting into the garbage or any kind of food. In general, if you live in bear country and you're having problems with bears, you need to think about it from the bear's perspective. In the bear's perspective, it's not how much you get paid dollars per hour, it's calories per hour. They are looking for large quantities of calories as fast as they can get them to store a sufficient amount of fat to get through the winter. And so if you have food around your house that they have access to, whether it be bird seed or dog food or something on the outside, you cannot expect them to just go away. They're going to keep trying to get that food. So you need to find a way of getting that food somewhere where the bears cannot get it if you want the bears to go away, if they keep bothering you.
Well, so there's another thing we take away from this, you know, cautionary tale. Be careful when you answer the door. Gary Ault, thanks so much.
Thank you.
So again, we're working our way through bears. We've now done grizzlies, black. Next week, polar. Just kidding. Next week on Here and Now, Republicans are calling for more investigations of leaks. But did you know the Obama administration is prosecuting more leaks than all other administrations combined? We'll hear more about that. Still ahead today, though, the new solo CD from Rhett Miller of the old 97s. Latest news is next, Here and Now.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. The Harvard Art Museums, from Chinese jades to Jasper Johns, Byzantium to Bernini. Learn more at harvardartmuseums.org. And the Institute of Contemporary Art, featuring the glass sculptures of Josiah McElhaney, on view now through October 14th, icaboston.org.